We took a week off. Sorry, no podcast last week. So this week, we've got a double shot. A two-parter. I know we said we were going to do the Jurassic Park movies, but it didn't end up happening. We want to book a guest for that and get the timing right. So we're going to just put that on the back burner for now. Jurassic Park podcast to come soon. But this week, we decided to go in a different direction. But I think it was a good one.
Cinemarathon with Dan and Jorge.
Welcome to Cinemarathon, the Movie Marathons podcast. I'm Dan and this is Jorge. We watch movie marathons all in one day and then talk about them later. As always, the email address is cinemarathon@gmail.com. Send us any suggestions for movie marathons or any questions for me or Jorge. For this episode, we are doing the horror film series from the late 90s, Scream. Directed by Wes Craven, the first two written by Kevin Williamson. And then we brought our friend Royce in to help us because he loves Scream. This is like your favorite movie. Or it was when...
It was at the time. Point. I was 12 at the time, but...
When you saw it.
When I first saw it, but yeah, don't hold that against it.
How did you first see the movie?
Well, see, I was in general banned from seeing violent films as a kid because there was an incident with me chasing my sister around with a knife when I was like...
Wait, what?
9 years old. Yeah.
Did anything inspire this or was it just normal horseplay kid stuff?
No, we had a game we played where it was called Imagination Land, which is not to be confused with the South Park episode that
happened
recently.
This is just your
recently.
Own thing.
Yeah. It was, I was a hero in this world called Imagination Land, and there was a villain named the Master Smasher who would take over my body every now and then.
So detailed.
I'm answering the question. Yeah. The Master Smasher took over my body one day and forced me to like menace my sister with a knife.
So, was that a costume that you could get before Scream?
Yes.
Did they just take an existing costume? They didn't make a new one.
They did not. Yeah. It had existed before.
And you could just buy it after.
People didn't think much of it. Yeah. I remember I'd seen that mask. I was like, that's kind of a spooky
mask. Like
a last
minute costume.
But for some reason, the first time you see that face, it scares the shit out of you.
You know what's kind of crazy to think about, too, at the time when that movie came out, it was like a big deal, like that it was violent or like that it was. Because I remember there was like an unrated version or like they made them cut out a lot of the like gore and the cutting people up and all that stuff. And it was like, oh, you know, your kids shouldn't see this movie. It's like, I remember that was sort of the stigma about it at the time. But if you think about it now, watching it now, it seems pretty tame compared to like what just any run of the mill slasher movie you'd see now.
The fact that everybody in the cast just looks like they're approaching 30 years old makes it a little bit easier to like deal with the fact that they're disemboweling each other and like throwing TVs on each other's heads.
I guess
you know?
That's true.
But I think just the idea of high schoolers doing that, it was all like sort of the atmosphere of the time, if you remember. Like even before Columbine, people were up in arms about that because we didn't have terrorism. We didn't have any direct threat. All we could do was focus on the threats within our own country.
Well, it just seemed like violence was an issue then in this way that it's not now. Like I feel like any movie can be – if the Cranks have taught us anything is that there is no line anymore. It has been completely obliterated. You can do any
sort of –
Well,
those aren't as popular though.
Right. No, I agree.
Well, I guess that's true. But it just seems like any one of those movies, it's like, okay, in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake, in the beginning of the movie, they're on the way to see Lynyrd Skynyrd, I think, or Steppenwolf or
Skynyrd,
some band.
Yeah.
They're on the way, and then this guy's head gets – they blow a hole through this guy's head, and the camera goes inside the head and out the other end. That's so much more grotesque than anything in Scream, but yet it's like nobody really cares because it's like I feel like at the time it's just people weren't used to seeing that kind of stuff.
Probably
like there just wasn't it.
Because what were the other horror movies before, like right before then? I don't even know.
Like none. Like this genre, this is kind of
this
what
was like
revived
the
it.
Yeah, reverse.
We didn't have slashers specifically. I feel like horror was kind of we still had the supernatural stuff going on in the 90s, but it was relegated to you know the bargain bins and to the niche sort of area.
Right.
This is the first time we took it out of that and sort of celebrated it
right.
on such a wide scale. And, you know, watching it back was interesting to me because I couldn't believe that it was as popular as it was. Watching it back now, it's really? Crazy to think that
oh,
that.
I could. Oh, I can. It's so watchable.
In 2009, something like Twilight has taken on, like, you know, this whole like idea of.
Well, there's
of,
no accounting for taste of.
Right, but isn't it crazy that something like Scream like had a mini Twilight phenomenon like back
I
in
don't know.
'96?
I can buy it just because of the dialogue. Like, I don't think people had seen dialogue like that. In that way, in a teen movie that was that clever and that, like, I could see people getting into the characters and, mm-hmm. And experiencing it in this way that it's like it's revolutionary in the way that the in, at least for horror that the characters in the movie are talking about what's going on in the movie the way me and my friends talk about the horror movies that we see.
I think it was
like what you know.
Maybe
I mean,
it was that for the older ones, but I think for us in general, it was just we were raised on like you said, it was a drought of horror films before Scream. So for us, it was like our first exposure to this roller coaster type of an experience, you know, in the movies,
right.
And that was just so exciting. All the jump scares were brand new for me.
So Scream, I think it totally holds up. It's such a
it's
good,
awesome.
It's really good, but there's still some things. Weird about it, like the grocery store.
Yeah, those are kind of dumb.
Where Ghostface keeps popping up in broad daylight for boo scares.
But the thing is, though, they don't. He doesn't actually attack in the store,
right? But you see, it's sort of the scene is Tatum and Sydney, or
whereas
are,
I think in the sequels they would have an attack in the grocery store,
right?
Or something like that.
Well, the scene is Tatum and Sydney are walking around the grocery store, and then they see in the reflection just Ghostface sneaking around, which is sort of if you extrapolate that into real life. If there's a ghost, I mean, they had established that some people in town were, you know, buying the mask and wearing it around and acting like jerks. So maybe it's not the real ghost face, but the way the music kind of kicks in, it's to tell us like, oh no, this is the real guy. People would see him. It's
absolutely
insane.
If you're putting this into a real life context, why would you draw attention to yourself if you were the actual killer? Like
or be
that?
In the school bathroom.
Yeah, that's another dumb one.
So that seems a little kind of far-fetched, but you just kind of go with it. I mean...
Maybe they had a copy of Sydney's like Daily Planner. You don't know.
Her class schedule. Well, Billy might have that. Or
he might know. He's like, what are you doing after school today? Oh, I'm going to the grocery store with Tatum, and we're going to like get shit for the party tonight. All right, so I know I'm going to stalk you in my Ghostface costume there.
So moving on to Scream 2. So this Scream 2 comes out. Scream comes out in 1996. Scream 2 comes out in 1997, less than a year after the first Scream. So this is that's pretty quick. You know, like if it's coming out within 12 months of the first movie even debuting and it was in the theater, it took kind of a while for it to gain steam. So they really churned it out. Like obviously, so is this totally like just a money grab or is Scream 2 a good movie or what did you guys think when you were watching it?
Well, I think me and Jorge have a difference of opinion.
You know what, though?
There was a lot of discussion. Well, so, Jorge, sort of, what is your take on Scream 2?
At first, I really didn't like the opening in comparison to the first one, obviously, because the first one's amazing. And the second one...
You're talking about the movie theater
In the movie theater.
Why could you just not relate to the protagonist in the opening of the second one for any specific reason?
No. See, here's the thing, though. I really liked their conversation. And I really liked where we were going with it, but I did not like that it happened, that the murders happened in a movie theater.
This is in the movie theater with Jada Pinkett.
Yeah, and Mekhi Phifer.
No,
Omar Epps.
No, yeah, you're thinking of I Still Know What You Did Last Summer with Mekhi Phifer.
Or are you just giving him the benefit of the doubt?
I'm just saying, it's a similar kind of movie as a sequel, and maybe even though you just watched this movie an hour ago.
But yeah, I didn't like that. It took me out of it that I was in like a movie theater. Like it just seemed stupid. And then the reason that they were killed, like I was kind of up in arms, like why do they kill these two random people? And then everybody was like, well, wait, there's a reason why. And then it turns out that it's because they have the same like names as somebody in the first movies. And it was like. Like, oh, his last name was Stevens, and in the first movie, a guy named Steven was killed. I don't know, I just, I really liked a lot of the conversations in the movies, like the kind of self-analysis and, like, talking about the sequels and stuff. Like, thought that was cool, but there was something about it that was just, it got kind of dumber. But after watching Scream 3, I'm getting a little ahead, but it, like, it turned me around a little bit on two.
On Scream 2. You were nicer to Scream 2 after Scream
3. Yeah, exactly.
Well, my sort of take on the beginning is I think I'm more with you about the movie theater scene.
Yeah.
Because I feel like
it's over the top.
Well, right. It's you know, people are, they've got a ghost face on wires floating in, and people have glow in the dark knives, and it's just sort of like this hoopla.
Yeah.
But the reason why it's probably like that is to justify and have it make sense as to why like, nobody's noticing that this woman is being butchered to death. But then at the same time, to me, it sort of says, like, well, this is, you know, in no way reminiscent of any sneak preview that I've ever been to. Like,
yeah.
You know, I've never seen audience behave that way. But.
Well,
you know,
to be fair, I heard when they were test screening 28 Days Later, for instance, they would hide people in the audience or have them come into the audience and they would be infected and they would like go nuts in the middle of the screenings. And the studio planted these people. Yes, this is true. That being said, I don't think that the opening of Scream 2 really had much to do with reality. I think it was. I mean, Scream 1 came out, and almost immediately there were all of these, you know, people up in arms, as you mentioned, about the violence of the film and how it was going to influence teenagers. So I think a large part of the second film was kind of a satire on this whole idea of film affecting people and in turning people into this crazy mob of, like, bloodthirsty goons, you know? So, like, the first scene is, yes, it's ridiculous, but it also introduces you to this world where people, like, kind of get off on this bloodlust. And it's almost crazier that all this was supposed to have happened in real life, and this film is based on true stories in the context of the film. I thought it was a really fun, clever way to open the movie.
I don't really see the connection in terms of being upset about, well, who are these characters or who are these people
right.
that we don't know or why would they get killed? Because to me, it's like, well, they go to the college that Sydney goes to, just like Casey Becker, played by Drew Barrymore, who dies in the first movie, goes to the high school that she goes to. It's
what connection
really no different.
What connection do they really have except one of them used to date her?
Yeah, and she sits next to Sydney in,
right.
in lit class.
But
whatever.
That's more connection than the other two.
Well, I mean, it's what else, you know, would you have wanted? It's, you know what I mean? Like, I don't see any difference between their death and Casey Becker's death in terms of, like, how those
people
are relevant.
Well, because that was introducing you to the series.
Yeah, it's introducing you to the sequel. I don't. It's not really any different than...
Well, think about... Well, this is getting ahead again, but the three, it brings you in on familiar characters. But I guess that's bad.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's almost... That seems to be breaking in the tradition in the first two movies.
Suppose.
Although, I think you, while we were watching it, brought up, like, oh, I don't see why they can't just be watching it on video.
Yeah, that I think would have been way better.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in the story, it's like Scream, it's Stab, or I'm sorry, whatever, the movie's called Stab, it's coming out.
What would the scene be if they were watching it on video? Isn't the fun in the irony, like, that she's actually getting killed while they're all, like, celebrating this fake violence?
I just more enjoyed their conversation about how, like, you know... They're basically addressing that there was no black people in Scream.
Yeah, but that's not really what the scene was about.
Well, yeah, but what I'm interpreting from Jorge is that he got caught up in the all these people are acting in this way that doesn't reflect reality in this way that it sort of took you out of the story.
And just like how it was just an unbelievable hubris that they would that the killers would kill somebody in a movie theater, like.
Well, let's not bring reality into these films.
That's just too far, though.
Well, it's just a difference of – it's just your – it just affected you in that way. If they had been watching in their house on video, you wouldn't have had that problem.
Wouldn't have even thought of
it. You know, you wouldn't have been like, well, you know, how are the – you know.
But no, that would have been stupid. I'm just going to say it. If they were watching it at home, like, isn't she getting ready to watch a scary movie in the first one? So isn't
it would be very similar.
It's just a redux.
It's more
fun.
They were in a theater by themselves or something.
No, that's
theater full of people.
No, but that's the whole irony of it. Like, they're expecting you to think that the first scene is going to be like they're isolated, and the irony of the whole thing is that they're the complete opposite of isolated, except they are, because everybody else is in this crazy fervor. And, like, this woman's actually getting killed in front of them, and they have no idea. So it's a nice little commentary, and it's, like, ironic, and it's fun. I feel like it's just so expected to do the other thing.
My favorite part about Scream 2 is the scenes from Stab. To me, I think those are hilarious. Those are so funny.
Luke Wilson.
Yeah, Luke, I forgot. Amazing. You know what's so funny? Is I remembered the scene with the movie version of Billy, and I remembered that you know, but I didn't remember it as being Luke Wilson.
Me neither.
So then when it showed up and it was Luke Wilson, I was like, oh my God, that seems so funny. And then to top it all off, it's like, what is Luke Wilson doing?
But isn't that funny? I bet you saw Luke Wilson, like, once he was announced as Luke Wilson somewhere, like, in your mind. And you're like, oh, I like this guy. I don't know why.
You think I had a subconscious tie to his performance in Scream 2?
I think that happens a lot.
Yeah, I agree.
So with Scream 2, the problem for this movie to me is the number one thing that it sort of makes it not as good as the first movie is it's just like a lot of like what made Scream good was the novelty of it. Right. That this is a new way of doing things. Billy's the killer is the most obvious person and then he turns out to be it. So now it's sort of you're like the audience is more on its game and like how do you throw a curveball? It's by giving you Mickey, the film student killer who disappears 40 minutes before he's introduced as a killer. So I guess the way to not expect it as him is to sort of take him out of the movie, but then his reveal is so lame.
This was not Kevin Williamson's original intent in the film, though. There was actually a very different ending to the script, which he had to erase because it was leaked to the internet. Because it was out there, he had to change the ending after his original ending was killed.
That's a huge defense for the
It's
Mickey
a huge
defense,
but if you watch the film, the original ending, which I read the original script because I was that much of a fan at the time, and it all makes so much more sense if he'd kept his original ending.
So how is it supposed to go?
It's supposed to end with the roommate and I believe her boyfriend are – her boyfriend again is one of the killers, which is great.
So it's like the first movie – when you goes into the second movie, Jerry O'Connell plays her boyfriend. You're thinking just like, well, no way it's going to be this guy.
No. And you're going and expecting her to have trust issues with whoever her boyfriend is at the time, of course, because why wouldn't
she? Why would they do that?
But of course you assume, wow, Sydney's really got to get over her trust issues because this guy's here to protect her. But no, like this guy is also evil and he's in this weird like natural born killer's romance with her roommate the whole time and they're psychos. And it's like that conversation she has earlier in the movie with Randy, where he's saying that people are going to inculcate themselves into her life, and so these people have just like found their way to her, and because they're obsessed with her, and they are, you know, the guy's going to date her, and her best friend is going to become her best friend.
So there's no Mrs. Loomis, there's no Billy's mom.
I don't think so. I don't remember that well, but I'm 99% sure. People complain about the twist at the end of the movie with Mickey especially, but I think that was just him trying to make the best he could with the scraps he was left with.
I remember even thinking of it like when I saw it in the theater at the time when they pulled the Ghostface off and it was Mickey and I was just like, are you fucking kidding me? Like I forgot like even that he was in the movie, but I didn't interpret that as like some clever like, oh, you got me. I forgot about that guy and now here he is. It was like, no, I literally forgot his character even existed.
I think I was impressed by it when I first saw it because I convinced myself that the movie was amazing.
So you were just in fan mode.
Oh, yeah,
you were just
sure.
in pure apologist mode.
It was like the first time we saw Phantom Menace, you know? Like, nothing was taking me off of that.
I don't know what you're talking about. I hated Phantom Menace from frame one.
I specifically remember somebody was very enthusiastic about that movie.
No, I knew Phantom Menace was bad from the second I walked out. I said, they're going to make two more. They're going to be just as bad.
That was a slow retreat. I remember you planted your flag right in Happyville.
Oh, no. Don't even try to spin it like that. Okay. I remember walking out of the movie, and my first take was it started really shaky, but the lightsaber duel at the end sort of saved it and made it great.
I'm going to one-up you and say that I remember somebody who walked out of The Matrix Reloaded very excited about what he had just seen as well.
I don't know. This is rough. I don't like where this is going. Let me just say that, okay, well, I'll admit that, yeah, I was buzzed about Phantom Menace in some ways. That I was sort of lying to myself. I didn't want to believe. I wanted to believe it was good so badly. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there have the same reaction.
Yep. I'm going to come out of the closet right now and happily say that I walked out of Phantom Menace, Matrix Reloaded, and Scream 2 very happy with my previous 2 hours experience. Because I'm just that kind of moviegoer.
Right.
And it took me a while. It took me Up until now, to really admit that Scream 2 was an inferior film to the
first
one.
Yeah, but to be fair, Scream 2 is no Phantom Menace level disaster. I mean, it has a few problems, you know, obviously that make it not as good as the first one.
Right.
But it's entertaining movie. It's got funny scenes. I mean,
it's not awful.
There's parts of it that are awful, like Jamie Kennedy's gross facial hair. Like,
no, but
Randy looked like a porn star.
Isn't that kind of appropriate
thing,
though?
That's a times.
He's the guy that went to college and did that.
Yeah. Randy would have that really gross.
I was okay with
that.
Goatee.
I was really
that really
okay
gross
with that.
Goat. So if you were coming into it as such a super fan, how hurt were you by Randy's death?
I was devastated.
You took it personal. I remember I was choked up. I was really upset about it.
I wouldn't say choked up, but I was like waiting for the moment when he was going to like wake back up after everything. And of course, you're going into it, you were ready for like at least one big main character to bite the dust.
Right.
But personally, I was hoping it was going to be a big swerve and Sydney was going to die because she's not the best heroine in the world anyway. You don't really want to root for her.
Yeah, she is kind of really unlikable.
She's whiny.
Really?
Yeah.
I like her,
I don't like – I don't really like Sydney at all.
She's
like,
a victim.
It's not so much that – it's sort of my problem
with her. She's literally a victim.
No, she's actually not, but she's one of the few that's – well –
She's attacked by a serial killer.
She's just stalked by several serial killers.
I don't like Neve Campbell. No, I had a bad experience with her at Sundance 2000, to be exact.
What is this story?
Oh, man.
This Neve Campbell Sundance story.
I was 17 years old, and me and my cousin I was 16, actually. Me and my cousin were at Sundance, and we had gotten everybody's autograph and everybody's picture except for hers. And when we asked for hers, she blew her cigarette in our face and ran away talking about how too many people were coming up to her. And she jumped into a car and drove around the corner. And
so you were the victim.
I was the victim in that situation.
This was after you saw Scream 2.
Yes, it was.
So, yes.
But you didn't like her before then, or...
You know, something inside of me didn't really like her. And when I met her, I knew why.
It validated your inner thoughts about her.
I thought about slipping on a mask and stalking her for a while. I'm not going to lie.
Well, my reason for sort of considering her unlikable is more that just the moments in which she acts empowered and successful always seem like lame to me, just inherently lame. Like, I don't know if you know the line in Scream when Courtney Cox comes in. She's like, I got a new ending for you guys. Like, the news reporter finds the gun and gets it. She's like,
I like that ending.
I like that ending. That's just, like, lame.
Well, that's just how girls talk to each other.
Wow. I don't know about that, but, I mean, it's just...
No, they do. They kind of do. And so I think that's just more of a guy reaction to
Okay. Well, that aside, it's also, you know, when she goes from... having her own boyfriend and one of her best friends turn out to be killers and admit that they've murdered her mother.
Right.
From moments after hearing that, she puts on a mask and gets an umbrella and starts prank calling them and playing killer. It seemed like, you know, I don't really root for her. I'm rooting for Billy and Stu. Like, I think they're hilarious. Like, I
don't know if I'm going that far.
Well, I'm not saying I'm rooting for them to succeed. Yeah. I mean, I don't mind when they die. It's not like I'm like, oh no. It's just that they're what's entertaining me in the movie, like, not her.
If I could trade her life for another character's life in the film, I probably would. That's probably all there is to it.
Yeah, I would say that. I get more pleasure out of seeing Dewey or Courtney Cox seems like a more interesting character to me and anything. I think that's sort of a move that would have really benefited the series to me, sort of knocking her off in a way that's really surprising. Like, I feel like that would really be an opportunity to surprise people.
She should have died halfway through the second one, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a really good call. Like, not in the beginning. Like
she should have taken Randy's place,
I think. Is it Nightmare on Elm Street or – it's Friday the 13th where the main girl dies in the first scene in the second one?
Yes.
Is it Friday the 13th
or
is it
Nightmare
on Elm Street?
Friday the 13th, Hostel as well.
Yeah, it's in a lot. Yeah, the main character, right, in Hostel and Hostel Part 2.
Well,
he dies.
Thing with that is it kind of. I feel like that kind of invalidates the first one sometimes when you do that.
Right.
Sometimes it can.
Like for Hostel, I didn't like that really.
Well, obviously, Psycho, they do it halfway through. You know, the first movie.
Well, that's almost seems like a whole different thing. Is where they trick you. It's like they think the movie's all going to be about Janet Leigh, and then she's killed. And so the Drew Barrymore scene in the first Scream is obviously a reference to that, where it's like Drew Barrymore's kind of a bigger star. It's like you right. think it's going to be about her, but then she just gets killed. I mean, her face was on the front of the poster.
Right.
This would be that on a much bigger level, though, I feel. Right. If you think you're building a franchise around the character
exactly.
and then you bump them off halfway through
but
the
But if you kill
them
during the first scene, it's almost like, well, we've seen that before.
Right. No, it
like,
should happen halfway that. Through.
Yeah, she should be the main character, and then all of a sudden, instead of Randy getting pulled in the van, it's just Sydney's pulled in the van and just killed. But then I guess the way they've written the story, I mean, it being
yeah,
about
no
the mom,
way.
It's like, you know, it if Sydney's dead, it's like, well, Ghostface is done. You can pack it up and go home.
If that spares us Billy's mom and Sydney's half brother, then I'm all right with that.
So then we get to the third movie.
Do we have to?
It's not written by Kevin Williamson.
No. His last name is Krueger.
The guy who wrote Scream 3?
Yeah, his last name's actually Krueger.
I think Aaron Krueger with an E, and he wrote
and
Transformers 2.
And you see, this is the man responsible for
co-wrote Transformers 2.
In many ways, we could just say it was all a bad dream.
Well, he's the spice that makes Transformers 2 different than Transformers 1, right? Am I correct?
Probably, yeah, because they brought him in to help the other two guys.
It's the same two guys that wrote Transformers, but then if they just needed extra racist robot jokes, they got this guy.
Okay, help me out here, because how is Transformers 2 that much different than Transformers 1?
Oh my God, I could go... this is a whole
They're both absolute trash, let's be honest.
They're both awful, but trash. I think there's a clear difference between the two.
Here's what I'll say. I'm instantly, if it wasn't enough dragging my name into supporting Phantom Menace and Matrix 2.
It got there.
Any credibility I've had building up so far on this show, I'm losing with every word I speak now. I'm aware of this, but here's the thing. Transformers, the first movie, not that bad. I mean, I know what this sounds like.
It's very bad, but it's not as bad as the second one.
The second one is terrible. Yeah. It's just insulting to anything and everything. But the first Transformers movie has cool special effects and awesome action scenes. I love Shia LaBeouf. It's funny. I love the scenes.
Lots
with the
of
parents.
Racism still in the first one, though.
Yeah, the
not
first
as
one
bad
is really,
as the second one.
I'm just saying.
But there's
the first movie is sort of fun. I mean, it's not like that amazing, obviously, but just for like a summer movie, I know I'm going to get killed for saying this, but this is how I feel. I don't really mind the first Transformers movie.
You don't mind the Mountain Dew machine, which doesn't exist in real life.
Well,
the by
line
the way.
For me is blurred.
There's no such thing as Mountain Dew machine being turned
I don't
into
know
a Mountain
what,
Dew Transformer.
I don't know what I really like. Sincerely, or I'm just liking ironically now. Like, I have
That's
no
fair.
Idea. I get joy out of Transformers. I don't really care in what form, but when the Mountain Dew Transformer, I'm laughing. So. That's great.
So
but
what turned it against you in the second one?
It's so much like Shrek to me. It's all farting. They fart and they're crude. And when Megan Fox takes the little one as like a pet, it's like
and he's humping her leg.
He's like humps her leg. It's so like gross. And then it's like it's those farting little mini ones that they set on fire in his house and all that stuff. And then also it gets increasingly ridiculous when Shia LaBeouf goes to robot heaven. I don't really know what's up with that.
You know
that.
What? Call me crazy, but I think they earned that.
You're just defending the worst part. Oh, yeah. And then the robot has balls. Like, that's such a Shrek joke. Like, oh, it's, you know, I farted or here's the balls. And it's like so gross and it's just so lame. Like, I just hate that shit.
And you think that's Mr. Krueger's contribution?
Well, I don't know. That definitely doesn't seem to be really in the first one that much.
I could see that. Fair enough.
I mean, you know.
You've convinced me over the course of the last
5 minutes.
So,
and Scream 3, it's flat. It isn't more a comedy than it is a horror movie? It might be.
I guess so.
Yeah, but it's only comedy in the sense where, like, they tried to be scary, and you can tell that they just gave up, like, you know, half the time, and so decided to just make stupid jokes out of it all.
Well, it's just, like, it's also in the casting, too. It's like we've got Patrick Warburton, Putty from Seinfeld, and he's not, like... He's playing it comedic, you know.
Yeah,
and
he's not a comedic character on paper.
No, and then also there's all these like weird cameos, like Carrie Fisher, who laments the fact that that she looks just like Carrie Fisher, but and Carrie Fisher got the part of Princess Leia, but this character in this movie wanted that part. It's like, why are we even doing that? Like, would that fit in the Scream 1 or Scream 2? Like, not at all.
It's just, I think in their minds it was, well, how can we get even more referential in the third film, you know, and it's just like a heightening of that. But I think the entire film collapses once you get to that point,
right,
where you're going to place it in Hollywood and have actors talking about how they look like the actors it's who they so actually on the nose. Are. It's just, it's so on the nose that they're like, you know, taking a razor blade and shoving it through their nose.
Is that like what they think the writing was like in the first two Scream movies?
No, I think they feel like it's a heightening of it. Like, we just have to go bigger, guys. We have to go bigger. It's what people want.
So they're not trying to recreate it and failing. They're just saying like, oh, let's just up.
This is the next logical step.
They're saying this is the last one. Let's throw everything we got at the wall. Why the fuck not?
Right. Well, and then to me, what I take away from Scream 3 is the single-handedly like saving the movie from being at least remotely watchable. Parker Posey the doppelganger Gail Weathers.
Parker Posey is amazing. I don't know what the hell she's doing. I don't know who was directing her.
No one.
No. Clearly Wes Craven had no control over her.
Nobody.
She is a nut job, I can tell you from personal experience. But she is. But
you always have these stories of personal, like...
The first time I met her, her dog was eating my banana. And
well, she lived across the street from you in New York,
for two
right?
years, yeah. But and I crossed her every day, but never spoke to her. The first time I ever spoke to her was out here when her dog ate my banana. And then I had to talk to her on the set of Boston Legal. It was me, her, and her assistant. And she's awesome, but she's out to lunch. And that's all. And all I can
what?
She's out to lunch.
What does that mean?
Kind of crazy.
Yeah, well, no.
Her brain is like,
it's like
she's doing other things.
You know, when you have a conversation with somebody, normally you can like say something to them. You can see it in their eyes where they're processing it. And like it goes into the back of their head and then they say something in response. With her, it was just like we were like living in two different universes for like the half hour that we were speaking.
So the killer is this guy from Felicity. Like he's right. planned this whole
thing. He orchestrated
thing.
The whole
yeah. He's like the
Scream
orchestrator,
events.
Yeah, of everything that's happened. He's sort of the ultimate killer, like even more than they sort of make Billy and Stu from the first movie seem like bit players, almost.
Right,
and he's just sort of like
they
this
were his
main,
lackeys.
Yeah, but he's this terrible actor.
You would think that also, were he the puppet master, they would have mentioned him once. In the original, like I get I what I
like he would be in there when they're about to kill Sydney if he hates her so much.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean to go against Randy's rules for the third film in the trilogy, which were so carefully and seamlessly explained to us.
Randy popping in via videotape from his sister from Welcome to the Dollhouse.
First of all, like that's a bit much to assume that he was behind everything that happened in the first movie, really. And second of all, he is about as convincing as, you know, a fucking kitten taking down a gazelle, like when it's him versus Sydney in the last scene.
Well, he doesn't seem to have any sort of like command of
no.
like, I'm going
that's
to...
Scary.
I'm going to give this speech about like, you know, pontificate about how like I've been wronged and this is my like... Hannibal Lecter moment. It's just he just has nothing.
Who is the casting director for the third film? Was it a guy or a girl?
I don't know. Why would that matter?
Because I think he might have blown his way into that role. That's what I'm saying.
So wait, if it's a guy, you think he had sex with the casting director?
I think
so. Theory.
Yeah.
Let's find the whether or not the casting director of Scream 3 was male or female. Because we're going to figure out if Scott Foley blew his way to the part, a la Brandon
exclusive,
Routh.
Exclusive breaking story
he's
here.
He's got the look.
Good end to more cast.
Well, I'm looking this up. Let's talk about the cameos. We briefly mentioned Carrie Fisher before and...
Jay and Silent Bob.
That's right, Jay and Silent Bob.
Roger Corman.
Which makes no sense. How does that make sense? To have Jay and Silent Bob just be in this movie?
Well, in the same universe where like a monkey can, lead them on a wild adventure and save their lives. You know, a killer could be in the
later.
Perfect place at the perfect time. I think it fits.
It would be pretty awesome if they were characters in Scream.
Oh my God. Like they were just
like they were
talking about.
They were the replacements for Randy.
You just scroll by it.
Stunts, camera.
Casting department.
Okay,
we do not have the casting director on file.
Unlisted.
We only have the associate and the extras casting. To me, what that means.
Give us your Hollywood insight on that.
As a Hollywood insider, what that generally means is that the casting director was probably caught getting head from Scott
That's
Foley.
Not true.
And was given two options.
That's not what it really means, though.
This is how Hollywood works. Let me just tell you.
No, really, though.
He was probably caught in the act, and he was given two options. He could take his name off of the project, or he could have the pictures made public. And he clearly chose the former.
You don't know any of this.
I'm a Hollywood insider. The bottom line is that Scott Foley had no business being in this
role.
Or in this role.
No, none. Just terrible. Just a horrible ending. I don't even consider it like the same. Like when I'm watching Scream, I'm not like thinking.
It has a different tone.
Like I'm not like thinking like, oh yeah, why Billy and Stu are cutting each other up? Like Scott Foley's off somewhere. Laughing maniacally and like,
but is he even laughing maniacally?
I don't even. It doesn't.
Can't he even do that?
No, yeah. You're expecting him to like walk out of the shot and be like, "Oh, Felicity, can you come to my room?"
Well, that does it for part one. But keep an eye out for part two, where the conversation goes more towards the "I Know What You Did Last Summer" movies. So thanks for listening.